Hello, everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I am Jason Cavallari.
And today we are getting lost in the ruins of Arnak.
Yes.
The board game we're talking about is Lost Ruins of Arnak. Not the Lost Ruins of Arnak. There's no definite article. Just Lost Ruins of Arnak. I checked. Because I couldn't remember.
It's good to be thorough.
Yeah. Lost Ruins of Arnak is a game designed by Elwyn and Min. Those are the designer names, Jason.
That's just their names?
Well, I think those are their usernames on BoardGameGeek, and apparently that is what they go by, it looks like, as designers, for their designer credits. If you click on their names within BoardGameGeek, it takes you to their, like, designer page, and then, like, has their full name, and, like, you know, like, the Elwyn and Min are in quotation marks in between their first and last names, and describes the fact that they are both, well, they are husband and wife, like a design team, and that they have been friends with the Czech Games Edition people for a long time or something, because mm-hmm. The publisher is Czech Games Edition. Anyway, so they have other names, but I guess they are going by Elwyn and Min. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, because there's like one of those little, you know, like diagonal thingies over the eye for Min. Yes. I don't know what it's called.
A diacritical mark?
If you say so. And there's a bunch of those over the all of the letters, a lot of the letters for these artists as well. Jin Kus, Andre Erdina, Jacob Pulitzer, František Sadlasek, Milan Vavron. I don't know. Sorry. Looks.
Honestly, this is the most amusing part for me.
I mean, maybe these are Czech names. Maybe they're Polish. I don't know. I can't pronounce them. I apologize.
Either way, I can't pronounce them.
I try. Lost Ruins of Arnak plays between 1 and 4 players, has a playing time listed of 30 to 120 minutes, and a weight on the Board Game Geek weight scale of 2.87 out of 5.
Okay.
Really?
I think it kind of depends if you're a beginner or not.
I guess. Yeah. Okay. So Lost Ruins of Arnak. Let's talk about theme first, because that's probably the last time we'll ever talk about it for the rest of the podcast, right?
Right. Never. Never again.
I mean, for this episode anyway. But Lost Ruins of Arnak essentially is supposed to be like a sort of like archaeology game, I guess, where you were playing an archaeologist and discovering things in the ruins of Arnak.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you're in the jungle.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a very like Indiana Jones sort of aesthetic to it, you know, you're finding artifacts, you're finding like, I don't know, like various things that are like useful for traveling into, you know, like uncivilized areas and sort of like, you know, adventuring, right? I mean, it has sort of like an adventuring slash like archaeology sort of theme to it is what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
Now, that comes through, I think, the artwork, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like on the cards and the board and everything. But mechanically, it doesn't really, I mean, there's nothing really that evokes that through the mechanics that you play with in this game, which is why I said it's probably the last time we'll talk about it for this podcast.
Because it's not really germane to the
correct, yeah. Lost Ruins of Arnak is essentially a Euro game, we'll say.
Sure.
And I think because it is a Euro game, like many Euro games, the theme doesn't exactly, you know, it doesn't exactly sing with the mechanics, right? We know that we are here, that this is a place that we're discovering useful artifacts, we're discovering useful tools, all of this stuff to help ourselves along the way. But aside from that, like it could be anything. So I don't know. That's kind of how
true.
I felt after two plays, was just like many Euro games, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
The theme is brought to life through the artwork and the names of things, and they do a fantastic job of that as much as they can. But beyond that, the theme is basically irrelevant.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, there's like a research track in this game, and like, you know, I've seen this research track in any number of games, and it's not substantially different from any of the other ones that have like a research track or a religion track or like whatever. Yeah. You know?
So, I mean, I was actually thinking I should open the podcast with, "Hey, Jason, do you like research tracks?"
I can spin some research tracks.
"Hey, yeah. Jason, do you like worker placement?"
I do, mostly.
"Hey, Jason, do you like deck building?"
Yeah, not really.
"Hey, Jason, yeah? do you like resource management?"
Okay, it's a step above the deck building.
Okay, because I mean, like, what we're talking about here is, like, the kitchen sink approach to Euro game design.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
All of those mechanics, all of those, you know, like Euro, like, well, I guess mechanics, but I mean, like, there's many games out there that are designed around deck building. There's many games out there that are designed around, you know, resource management. Many games designed around worker placement, right? Mm-hmm. Or action selection or what have you. This game takes a little bit of a, like, a little pinch of all of that and throws it together and makes a game that has all of these different mechanics, this mechanic salad working in concert. So you get a little sample of each of it, but I don't feel like any one of those mechanics is the sort of like overriding main feature of this game.
Yeah, no, it certainly isn't. Although I was wondering about this, like, I wonder if you could be equally successful at this game if you chose to focus, you know, strictly on like the deck building or on the resource management stuff. Like, I wonder if it's sort of one of those things where, like, choose your mechanic and then just go with that one and see where you end up.
Maybe? See, it felt to me like a game where you try to utilize all of these different mechanics to, you know, allow yourself to do as much as you can in all the different areas where you might, you know, make the most amount of points. And it seemed like with the research track, you get more points, you know, per step the further along you get, right? Like,
right.
Like the later steps get you an increasing number of points. I don't know if it was exponential, but I mean, it was definitely more than linear, right?
Yeah.
And so you get, you know, like you want to make a bunch of big jumps to the end of that track or towards the end of that track by the end of the game. But then, you know, like, we didn't really think about all the points that you might get from cards in your deck or your hand or whatever. And like, that's another thing that I guess if you just built a massive deck that had a lot of high value cards in them, maybe that is another way to succeed at this game. And just, you know, I don't know if that compensates for all the points that you don't get on the research track if you ignore that.
No, I doubt it, because I was kind of trying to keep track of like the point values for the cards, and they're not very large.
They seem pretty small. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, I never really felt when we were playing the game like that was probably a likely strategy that you would want to take. But there's kind of points everywhere in this game. I mean, like, you've got your own little player board that has points on it that are there at the end of the game that you score if you haven't covered them up with these other little tokens that you can get throughout the game.
Yeah.
Because like, you can cover those things up to get like a little one time bonus, but if you do that, you lose the point value there.
But still get the points that are on the token. In some cases, those points are more than what you covered up. But
right, but you still get like both, it's still a net loss. Values. Yeah. Like if you've got the token and you've got the space on your board at the end of the game, you get the point values of both things. So I mean, like, there is a trade off there, you know. But anyway, so this game like basically has you doing a certain number of things, and at the beginning of the game, you've got like two workers. I think throughout the entire game, you only ever have two workers, as far as I can tell.
In both of the games we played, if there was an opportunity to get a third one,
I know there's a lot of games where like you can pick up extra workers throughout a game, but we didn't see that, so I don't know if that's a possibility or not. But we definitely didn't see that. So you've got your two workers that you can place in like, you know, a few, like a handful of areas that give you more resources of certain types. You've got like a basic deck that you start out with that can give you more of those resources essentially in order to, you know, take actions or whatever in order to, you know, perhaps buy more cards out of the card market, or, you know, work your way up this track that we're talking about and all this stuff. I've been talking for a while, Jason. Why don't you take the ball here and run with it? Okay. How do you feel like this mechanic salad works together? What gives this game an identity, you know, like that kind of sets it apart from all the other games that have these sorts of mechanics in them? These are the kinds of questions that I think that we should probably answer today. Because if you're a potential buyer of Lost Ruins of Arnak, what is it about this game that would draw you to it? And, you know, what is it that what can we say that would tell that person whether or not, you know, like, this is the right thing for them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the most direct way to describe it would be to say there's no set amount of actions that you can do on your
turn,
not on your turn, in a round. Right. Because you basically try and do as many as you can with the things that you have available to you.
Right.
So you have combinations of cards, you have resources that you can spend, you have your workers that you can place. And, you know, whatever you can do with those things in a given turn, in a given round, you can do as many as you can until you run out of whatever you need to do another thing. So the round lengths are sort of variable, which I think is nice, especially given the fact that there are so many things that you can do, because of all the different types of mechanics and all the different types of ways to get points. So it's really kind of an exercise in trying to, I think, you know, maximize across the board, and using how the different mechanics interact with each other in order to enhance that maximization. So
really trying to like min-max what you're going for to then use that as maybe like another stepping stone to get one step further within the same round and everything, right?
Right, yeah. So it's conceivable that you do a worker placement to get some resources, and then you use those resources to buy some cards, and then you put those cards in your deck, and then you play a card from your hand, and that allows you to go explore one of the locations and get more resources and points and what have you. So it's, you know, it's sort of a, it's not exactly like a round robin of stuff, but like the stuff does interact in various ways. If this is, I don't know, the type of person that this would be the game for, you know, I want to say this, despite the fact that there are so many different kind of mechanics in this game, I don't think it's a terribly complex game.
No.
Maybe it's complex to sort of master it and get really good at it, but
probably, yeah.
Learning to play is not that hard.
No.
No. So, and I think that's really a pro for it, actually. I mean, a lot of people would be intimidated when you see this board full of spaces and symbols and tracks and whatever else, and be like, oh my god, I'm never going to wrap my head around how all these things work. But it's really sort of easy to break it down into the different parts and how they work together.
If you're looking for a game that you could bring to a game night or introduce to some friends who maybe are a little bit more new to the hobby, and you wanted something that was accessible but was a good example of a resource track, deck building, worker placement, any of these things, this wouldn't be a bad choice.
Yeah. The other part of that is that it's not a very long game. No. I think that you said the Bucks says like 30 to 120 minutes, which is right. Like a huge spread. And I guess it also depends on how many players you have. But
it does.
We played with three players and
about an hour and 45, I think.
And that was with explanation because it was right. Like the first time we were playing it.
Yeah.
The second time we played was just you and me, and we were done in what, like 40 minutes?
45, 50, something like that. Yeah. It was just under an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And Kyle likes to joke it's because I took this one really long turn.
Yeah. I mean, while we were playing, I was joking around about it being 20 minutes, but it was really like probably five or something.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So, which could be also a con. Like, I can see how this type of game would lead players to fall into like a sort of paralysis kind of.
Yeah. Moment. A paralysis.
I hate that the phrase that we all.
Oh, you don't want to use the other word.
No, I hate it.
Such what if we just say phrase. AP?
Okay, fine. Yeah, I can dig initials.
But now our listeners may not know what AP stands for, Jason.
Oh God.
What does it stand for?
I have a hunch, and I don't want to say it.
Analysis.
No.
Say the other word.
Paralysis.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Now we've got all the ASMR people checked in.
Oh, ooh, yeah. Hey, we're transitioning this podcast into something else.
Yeah, so you might get stuck on all of these various wondrous options available to you and how you most effectively min-max your benefits out of all of these things that you have and all of the things that you might get with the stuff that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then you might take up a lot of time doing so. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, who is the game for? Well, I'm not one to tell people what to buy, but I mean, if you need a game that's I'm fairly, you know, heavy on the Euro part of it, although not heavy to play. So it's a relatively easy to play, relatively fast, middleweight Euro game.
It also doesn't look like a lot of Euros look, you know, just visually.
No, it's actually pretty, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, actually. Yeah, it's very vibrant, very bright, colorful, you know, like very lively art. It does not look like, you know, like something that came out of the art museum downtown Indianapolis.
No, there's dinosaurs in it.
Yeah, yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, I definitely went with a dog theme the first time we played, where if something was available in the card market that had a dog, or there was like an assistant that you could recruit that had a dog, I got all the dogs. And those dogs were pretty good, actually.
And the last time you played, you tried the ostrich strategy.
My ostrich strategy did not work at all. So, I mean, if these are the types of conversations that you like to have when you're playing board games, ostrich strategies and, you know, like dog decks, dog strategies, whatever, if that appeals to you, just like the silliness of that, while also enjoying, you know, a middleweight sort of Euro salad, if that sounds appealing to you, if the theme sounds appealing to you and you think you'd like to look at artwork that depicts, you know, like sort of a, I don't know, it's not really like steampunk, but sort of like, you know, almost like magical fantasy world with archaeology stuff going on, then Lost Ruins of Arnak might be for you.
Yeah, I don't understand. So there was only a lot of hype about this game, and
it's very popular and it came out in 2020, and it was just like on the radar for a very long time in a very big way.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed to be like all over the place, and my friend Dave, who's the one that sort of convinced me that I should try it, is like totally into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, after having tried it, like I don't get what the hype is. Like, it's a fine game.
It's very solid.
Yeah, it's a solid game, but I don't understand like why people are so.
That's the thing for me is it doesn't seem to like transcend any particular category for me.
Yeah.
In the board game space, like it's not the best Euro I've ever played. It doesn't have any mechanics that are particularly new or inventive in a way that makes me like surprised or excited or, you know, like impressed in a way that makes me want to keep coming back to it and explore it further. I feel like when I sit down and play this game, I basically get it the first time. I understand what it's doing. I understand ways that I could probably improve. But it doesn't tickle that part of my brain that's looking for some new way of thinking about a board game, you know?
Yeah.
And generally, I think what we see with games that are on the radar, like, you know, that hot and for that long, is that there's something exceptional about them. And I don't feel like there's anything particularly exceptional about this game. It just has all the things that it does very well.
Yeah, yeah, it does. That's the thing. I can't think of a bad thing about it. Like, there's nothing bad about the game. It just didn't, like, I don't know, wow me.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's fine. It's good. It's a good game. It's a fun game. If you sat down and played this game with anybody that, you know, enjoys sitting down and playing games, you're going to have a good time. It just doesn't seem to, I don't know, it just didn't do anything to demonstrate to us why it is one of the most popular games in the world right now.
Right.
Other than the fact that it does everything it does very well. It just doesn't do anything that seems particularly new or inventive, I guess. Does that seem fair?
It does, although this makes me think, you know, question whether or not we're just, like, jaded.
Yeah, we are at a point where, as gamers, we have played hundreds of board games,
yes.
Right? We've probably tried just about every type of, you know, genre of board game that is out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part.
Yep.
And in order to be really wowed, we're looking for something that does transcend some sort of category, right? Something that does something in a very novel way, something that just does something in a way that has it so well in a way that's never really been achieved before. That's when we get really excited these days. And
yeah.
That's going to be the case for people that have, like us, been in this hobby for years or decades and played a ton of games out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like, you know, like you can also say that you've played, you know, like the best examples of just about every category of game out there. If that's you, then this game isn't really going to blow your socks off, right? But if you are, you know, new or, you know, like you just kind of like, you know, still getting into the hobby and you don't feel like you've exhausted your excitement for everything out there, then, you know, like if you haven't played all of the different versions of terraforming Mars or all the different, you know, like the Gaia projects out there and everything that has like different resource tracks or advancement tracks, and you haven't played every single Uwe Rosenberg game that has worker placement involved and everything else that's spun off of those, you know, and if you haven't played all the best deck builders out there, or you're just interested in trying something that throws all that stuff together, then this board game might be, you know, like your favorite board game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult for us to say that other people wouldn't also love this, because Dave is clearly somebody that's played a lot of games and, yes, you know, like knows games intimately well.
Well, this but also like fits,
he loves this game.
This also fits directly in his sort of,
we kind of talked about this, right? Like that, yeah. he's very much the kind of person that seems to appreciate a game that lets him really analyze and min-max the decisions that he's making in order to just squeeze every little point out of like a chain reaction of decisions that he makes.
Yes.
If that's your thing, if you just live for that crap, then this game might be for you.
You live for that crap.
Yeah. You know, but for those of us that are looking for, you know, maybe a more, what's the word I'm looking for, Jason? Thematic experience, right?
Okay, yeah.
Maybe a thematic, you and I are both heavily thematic gamers, right, in terms of,
yeah,
our tastes.
That's true.
If you're looking for something that is crunchy in a Euro way, but also in a way that is new or novel or takes things to a new level, if that's what you're looking for and you don't really care about whether or not you're going to be able to really just, you're not focused on just the ability to really, really min-max things, I don't know. I just don't feel like this did it for me in that way where I came across, like, I came away thinking I got to go rush to the game store and come home with a copy right now, you know?
Yeah.
It was more like a, hey, if somebody ever wanted to play this at a game night, I would be cool with that.
Yeah.
Like, I would say, yeah, yes, Lost, okay, Ruins of Arnak is a good choice. That is fun. Place it on the table. No protest here.
Fetch it from the, yes, fetch it from the shelf and place it before me.
Yeah, I don't know, that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agreed. I'm not dying to play it again, but I certainly wouldn't object to it.
I would enjoy it if we did, but I'm not going to make any. I'm not going to be the one that says get it out. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
End.
That's right. All right. So, Jason, if people would like to get a hold of us and let us know what their favorite ruin in Arnak is, how would they do so?
All right. Well, if you want to let us know what your completely fictional favorite ruin is, you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website, limitedplaytime.com. You can tweet us at Limited Playtime, or go to Instagram at Limited Playtime Podcast.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about it, but I guess the ruins are like the worker placement areas, right? Like there's different benefits you get from opening up various ruins, that then they come with like a guardian that, yeah, you have to defeat.
Sometimes.
All of that basically is like mechanically the same as doing a lot of other stuff, though, because it's like, yeah, spend these resources, the guardian goes away, you get some points. It's the same as like going up the track, because it's like spend these resources, you move a space up the track, you get a benefit. It's,
yeah,
so like mechanically almost identical.
Like thematically, I think the whole map or the whole board is supposed to be like the ruins, and
yeah,
when you go to one of those spaces, it's like you're excavating a particular part of,
right,
the jungle.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
there's always
the
a monster to take. You got to take out.
Sometimes, or most of the time, there are some that don't have them.
Or it gives you a bad card that goes in your deck.
Yeah, but then if you defeat the good guy, the bad guy, you get to take its carcass home, and
you get its points.
It gives,
yeah,
you points.
It's a trophy.
Yeah.
Yep. Take its head. All right. Well, that's Lost Ruins of Arnak. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back
at some point.
We will be back.
It's like we're lurking. We're lurking constantly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. We need more games to play. That's the thing. We don't have a whole lot of stuff going on right now. And I don't know. We've got a couple big things that we'd like to do, but we need time and maybe even other people to do it. And then sometimes that's hard to arrange. So that's,
yeah,
kind of what the delays have been about. Plus, I got COVID. So,
yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Later.
Bye.